What do you think it means to be a person?
I don't know.
Me either.
Really.
Say scratch that again.
Scratch that a fan.
I'm Caitlin Metz, a non-binary illustrator and designer.
I'm Rebecca Tossig, a disabled storyteller and writer.
And this is Scratch That, Parenting and Reparenting Off Script.
A podcast for people trying to parent and person at the same time.
Head over to our Patreon, Scratch That Podcast, for show notes and a transcript of today's episode, and also to join the conversation.
Thank you for being here.
Hi, friends. Happy Monday.
Yay. Okay, so I'm introducing a very special person today, and I was feeling a little frantic trying to figure out how I was going to give everybody a window into Abby Van Meter and what we love about her. But I feel like as soon as we start talking, they're going to pick up on all of the pieces that make Abby special. I feel like Abby has been a part of my world for years and years and years. And then I went back to my email and I was like, when did I first hear from Abby? And I was shocked to realize it was this time, 2023, which feels like not long enough. But we met because Abby invited me onto her podcast, Stories Lived, Stories Told, which you should definitely check out. And I think maybe like 4 minutes into that conversation, I realized that that was not going to be enough and that I would need to talk to Abby many more times over the course of my entire life. So I think what stood out to me and what I imagine people will hear is just how insightful you are. You are so curious about people and about the world, and your heart is so full and open and generous. And so it feels wonderful to be in conversation with someone who will feel exploratory about the world, but with such a generosity and softness. And also, I think you might be the only person I know who writes emails that are as long as the emails that I write. And that feels so good to me. But it's because you care so much about words. Communication is like literally your vocation, which kind of brings us to the framework that you bring into this conversation. So Abby's the executive director of the CMM Institute for Personal and Social Evolution. So in addition to the Stories Lived, Stories Told podcast, and also hosting this new podcast, Cosmo Parenting Podcast, which I hope we get to hear more about today. But I've struggled to explain, even to myself, what the CMM Institute for Personal and Social Evolution is. So I think the best way for our listeners to get a little introduction into this world is by reading an excerpt of the beautiful first email that you sent to me. So here we go. This is from Abby to Rebecca in 2023. Oh, P.S. This is an excerpt of the email. It's quite long in a delicious, delicious way. Okay. The communication theory that my podcast is based around is all about the power we have to create better social worlds through our communication. One of the biggest parts of communication, of course, is being storytelling. The stories we tell, the stories we don't tell, the ones we don't hear or make space for. This is to say that we can create the kind of society that works for everyone and affords more humanity and dignity to all bodies. That is what a better social world is for me. What it is not is us conforming ourselves into some made-up idea of what society said life has to look like. I've got my goosebumps. That's me, Rebecca, speaking as I read Abby's words from 2023. All the meaning in our society is chosen by us. Nothing is inherent. We put it there. So we can also make the choice to create new meaning in our social worlds. Like, what does it mean to have a visible disability? What can it mean to have the ability to function fully in a society that is designed in an accessible way? How can we change the meaning we attach to disability, like you tried to do with your students, from one of pity and shame and problems to one of pride and identity and celebration? The thing that is sticking with me most are the words you used, collaborative reimagination. I could do a whole podcast conversation about just those two words. Collaboration is a core part of the communication perspective I am trying to promote in the world, and we literally can't do anything without imagination. That is Abby. So what a perfect person to have on our podcast, right? Like everybody's feeling it. What a fitting perspective to bring into this conversation, especially the conversation that Caitlin and I are trying to dig into and that we talked about in the last episode about paradigms and the anxiety we have about the stories our kids are learning about themselves and about the world and about their relationship to the world. So if you have not listened to that episode yet, go back one, get a little deep dive into the swirly twirly angst that Caitlin and I are feeling about this, and then come back and Abby is going to ground us and guide us and prompt us with the Abby spirit that we are know and love. So Abby, thank you for coming on the podcast.
Welcome.
And I hope I didn't make you feel too weird about reading your words from 2023.
No, I loved it. It was great to hear.
Okay, so I would say we definitely want you to speak into the conversation that we started last week. But I think to begin, we actually want to ask you a question that we ask most of our guests that come on, which is just a little window into who you are. In the spirit of Caitlin's mantra that we are always and all at once every version of ourselves that we've ever been, can you tell us a little bit about little Abby and maybe some of the scripts that you were given or the stories you were given as little you?
Oh my God, what a good question. I feel like I need to start by admitting that I am not a parent. I'm not parenting. I'm just doing the personing part of this podcast, which parenting is personing. So I won't pretend to know what it's like to parent, but I'm hoping I have some things to say about personing that are going to feel relevant to people. Scripts that I had growing up, probably the main one that I think about now as I'm re-scripting is a story around a kind of inflexibility, I would say. I grew up with an understanding of the world that was very simple. There's right and wrong, there's good and bad. And that belief made me into someone that was very committed to figuring out what fell into the right and good categories and being those things. And so that stuck with me for a really long time. I would say probably until I encountered CMM, which I'll share does stand for Coordinated Management of Meaning. And that's a mouthful and you don't need to know that. The language I hope people take away is communication perspective. That's kind of the like practical functional piece of the theory is that what does it look like to embody a communication perspective? So this oversimplified good, bad, right, wrong way of being in the world, to me, was one that made it so that when I encountered CMM, this idea that we make our own meaning and tell our own stories rocked my world. It wasn't modeled for me. I wasn't taught to do a lot of questioning around what I was told was right and wrong and good and bad. So that's a script for me that was really, really strong and has been the center of probably what my re-scripting is about. And I guess re-scripting is not the right word, probably unscripting. And I think you guys use that. And one of the things, you know, the language you used in the last episode was we're moving away from a script. And then Rebecca said more of a map. And then you were kind of like, oh, I don't know, because it doesn't have the destination on it. I think what I would hope to offer people instead of a script or a map is a toolbox. I don't know what it's going to look like where you're going, but what I can do is help equip you for the journey.
Oh, I'm so glad you're here to talk to us because I already have so many goosebumps. Yeah, because the toolbox is where what you will carry with you wherever you end up going. And you can't even write a map for what that will be, right? Because, I mean, for many very practical reasons, in part because the world is changing so fast, we don't even know what that map would be.
For ourselves or our kids, I think some of this panic is like, I want to try and imagine all the possible futures so that I can get you ready for them. And that's impossible.
The thing that pops into my head first with the image of the toolbox is like, okay, what are the tools? Are there a set number of tools that is like standard? Like all of us need these tools. And then there's some wild cards for the unique kids that we have that we try to figure out what the tool is for specifically you. Or like, how should we think about what those tools are?
Mm-hmm. I'll preface this by saying that if you check out the podcast that I'm facilitating this year, Cosmo Parenting, that's all about the toolbox. And so it's 12 months, 52 episodes, 12 different themes, and kind of exploring how can we build a toolbox for a parenting toolbox around these things.
Do you picture each theme? Because I know you cover a theme every month. Do you think of each theme as kind of like a tool?
I would say that the themes are a way to break down parenting to make it a little more understandable. Like it's a lens, basically. I'm understanding parenting through the theme of stories. I'm understanding parenting through the theme of conflict, of relationships, of power. And then within each theme, there's some tools that you could pull out of each one but they're all, you know, interrelated. It's not use this in this moment and then check you succeeded at parenting.
Oh, shoot. I thought that was a setup, man. And Caitlin and I are both on some of those episodes. You gather some stories from us too. So we'll have some crossover.
Yeah, yeah. In February and March, we'll get to hear from you guys, which I'm really excited to get to share their stories because they're really meaningful for me. To me, the toolbox is the way of saying, like I kind of said, I don't know what you're encountering and I can't pretend to know. And what everybody needs is different. And so I'm just going to offer you a way to find your way, but I can't tell you the way, I think. And I think it feels, that almost feels like, well, okay, thanks for nothing. That's, I want to know the way, but we can't know that.
So I'm trying to think, if I'm like reframing this in my own family, I'm trying to identify if there are, what the tools that we are already been working on would be, and also trying to imagine what are the tools that I have not thought of yet that would be useful. So I think like in our family, and Caitlin, I'm curious about, I'm sure you have like your own, if you think about it as tools, what those tools would be. I think in our family, like a big one for me is two things can be true at the same time. We can be afraid and capable is one that comes up for us a lot, or nervous and brave, excited and sad. That's a tool I didn't have growing up. Maybe that's why it became so important to me to pass on to my kid. What about you, Caitlin? And then I'm curious, Abby, about what tools you felt like you did get in that original paradigm, or maybe that you had to build for yourself.
I feel like the biggest tool that I hold on to is that it's okay to feel how you're feeling and express it, especially things that would be, in quotations, negative, which I think sometimes from the outside can look like very permissive parenting, which is a whole other conversation about parenting styles. But like, so long as that I am not policing Charlie's expression of a negative emotion, he doesn't get to harm other people. He doesn't harm himself. But if he's like throwing a fit or being angry, he like laid and kicked the door last night. And it was just like, he was really frustrated. And I would like to build tools where he's not kicking the door. But right now, I feel like the tool is just like, you can be upset that you're not getting the thing you want. I don't know if that's what's most present for me.
Oh, yeah. Can I ask you one follow-up question about that as just my personal investment in this? Okay, because I feel that as well. But there's this thing that happens where it's like, okay, you're not necessarily physically hurting anyone, but you're talking to me real mean. Do you have, does Charlie ever do that? And is that part of what you police, or is it like you get to express yourself even when it's expressed at me?
We have not yet encountered mean language.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
No, don't be sorry. It's amazing. Okay.
The thing that I am dealing with is physical harm, where he lashes out at me. And so I say, I'm not going to let you hurt me. And then I leave. It's the only time that I'm like, I try very hard that if he's having a hard time, that a punishment is never being alone. But if you're physically attacking me, I'm going to leave you on this big, soft, comfy bed and I'm leaving the space because you don't get to hurt me. Do those even sound like tools, Abby? What we're saying, is this the context of what you're...
I think so. It's hard to be like, okay, here's... And I'll just say what I'm going to say. For me, again, the toolbox is going to look different for everyone, but from where I'm coming from, it's kind of like the toolbox itself is this communication perspective. And the best, most simplest way I could describe a communication perspective is looking at communication instead of through it. It's one of those things that we take for granted. It's a script that we take for granted in our lives. And so it really is a practice, a very important practice to learn how to look at it. And so ways of doing that are asking questions, using the language of storytelling and meaning making. And so I would say one of the biggest tools that I've been able to like offer other people and use for myself is very simple question, what does that mean to you? Because again, meaning taken for granted, we're all creating our own meaning. That's the kind of distance, you know, referencing my podcast, the distance between the stories we live and the stories we tell is the meaning we're making out of it. So we might have quote unquote lived the same story, but the stories we're telling about it are different. And I think that's where a lot of that like friction comes from in relationships, is when we're miscommunicating, we're missing each other because we're making different meaning and we didn't get curious about that and ask. So that's a great tool for other adults. And I think that's a really great question to be asking your kid. Rebecca, you talked about in the last episode, you know, your son creating something and then ripping it to shreds, and that breaks your heart. And so you're making the meaning out of that, that is sad and undesirable, and we should try to move him away from that. But I wonder what he would say if you said, what does this mean to you? Or why do you do that? Not, no, you know, well, why'd you do that? But why'd you do that? You know, real like curiosity. So I think curiosity is a tool. And then a way to do that curiosity is to ask questions like, ask questions of yourself too, of what does this mean to me? Or what's the story that we're telling right here? I think the other big tool is, or maybe another name for the toolbox is improvisation. That's something we talk a lot about in Cosmo Parenting. Because what I'm hearing from both of you in the previous episode, and you know what you talk about a lot, is again this like very beautiful altruistic goal, hope of creating this beautiful world for your children. Again, CMM says we're active participants. We have a say. Our communication creates our social world. So that's another good question. What are we creating in our communication? What are we making together? And so in part, we embrace a communication perspective. We see ourselves as curious, active participants, and we create the social worlds we want. And then everything that falls outside of that realm is improvisation. One of the questions you asked in the last episode is, what do you want to teach your kid about the world? And I think the most important thing is to teach them about their relationship to the world, which is to say, again, you are an active participant. You get to create your own social world. And then I think, again, anything that falls outside of it, the biggest gift you can give is to equip them with their own toolbox to help them navigate anything that falls outside of that.
So what I hear you saying in there is that what I named when I said the both and, or we get to be two things at once, is a little bit more of like a script than a tool. And that the tool would be, I mean, like a little bit more curiosity about, I don't even know what the question would be, but I'm thinking about the ways that I say we get to be more than one thing at once as almost like creating a narrative for him. And it might be a useful one, but it's not necessarily being curious about what he's experiencing. The curiosity would be the tool. And the me saying we get to be more than one thing at once is kind of like a script that has been important to me.
I think that makes sense to say. Maybe one distinction I'll make in CMM-ish language is like, yeah, the story that you're telling is the script. And then the meaning-making process are the tools, you know, like what you're actually doing. And you talked about what's normal, you know, what was normal for you growing up and using that language of normal. And I would just say and remind people that normal is a story. It's always a story. Someone that came on my podcast, and I hate that I can't remember who said this to me, but she was talking about that you're a human. We're all human people and everything else is a story. And that's not to diminish experiences or identities that you have that you hold closely to you. It's just to say we have this shared humanity and everything else is something that's been constructed or something you're telling a story about that we can be curious about and still very much matters. But how does it help you maybe reframe if you can detach yourself from some of these stories?
Wow. Can you speak a little bit more? You said something earlier that like really caught me, but I wasn't totally sure I understood what it looked like in action. You said something about the difference between looking through communication versus looking at communication. Can you talk a little bit more about the difference between those things and what that feels and looks like in practice?
Mm-hmm. So a major difference I would say is that I studied communication. That's my degree and that's my work. So I am looking at communication all the time. There's so many theories and researchers that are looking at communication and trying to understand the patterns and the turns and the ways of being that we have with each other. Looking through communication, I would say everybody else that doesn't decide to study communication and dedicate their life to that is looking through communication to an extent, because we don't have things like a communication class in elementary school, high school. again, only in college if you choose to study it. Maybe you took that one public speaking class that everybody had to take, but that's not really what I'm talking about, the quality of our interpersonal communication especially. And so we take for granted the stories we have about communicating. The way we learn to communicate is what's modeled for us in our families or in our friends growing up. You know, that's how we learn to communicate. And that gives us our own stories. But when we look at communication, we're trying to, I think, intentionally learn things about how we communicate and, again, what it creates when we communicate, understanding more of that direct line between the quality of our communication and the quality of our social worlds. One of the people that just came on the Cosmo Parenting podcast that I want to reference is Barbara, and I work closely with her. She's a family therapist and a mother of two grown children. She's got five young grandchildren now, and she shared a story about her son coming home when he was a teenager with this crazy haircut, and she had a lot of things she wanted to say. Her son said, "Oh, I thought you'd like it," and kind of walked away. And I just want to quote her from what she said in this podcast. She said, "I think I also learned that criticizing either of my children didn't really foster the kind of relationship I wanted with them. And it didn't generally change behavior. It just creates an atmosphere of fear. So what I wanted to try to do was to think about what was the meaning of this event and the story of our lives." And what it led her to think is that there are many, many ways of thinking about the same thing. So I think that's a great example of what it means to look at communication is this kind of like zooming out. What's going on here? Being curious about it and framing communication as a thing, you know, as this like tangible thing in the space, in the relationship, that it matters and it matters how we communicate. And I want to complexify people's understanding of that a little bit too, because when I'm talking about communication, I'm not just talking about the words we say. People's brains are going to be like, okay, yeah, I get it. Eye contact is important, you know, nonverbal cues, whatever. But it even goes beyond that. One of my favorite things I read this year while I was going through the Cosmo Parenting podcast was an article from The Atlantic. And it was talking about what do parents say they value? And it's things like happiness for their children. But if you ask those kids what their parents value, it's things like achievement. And it's because when they come home from school, their parents say, "How'd you do on that test? Did you win the basketball game today?" It's achievement-focused questions. It's not, well, did you make a friend today? Did you have any moment where someone helped you? Did you help anyone else? You know, and so it's like, that's communication. What are you communicating in the kinds of questions you're asking?
I have more questions, but Caitlin, I also want to create space for you to process if you have a question you want to ask.
I'm just frantically taking notes and my brain is spinning. The thing that I was wanting to ask you about was this nonverbal, or like when Rebecca and I were talking about the paradigms we were building for our kids, it was like, it's not just the like scripts or the values or the stories we're telling them, but it's also about what they're watching us do. And so I'm wondering how that plays into this communication or this idea of communication like being a kind of a world building tool, which is how I'm hearing this. How do our actions or the things that we're choosing play into that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think modeling, right? Like you guys drew the relationship between personing and parenting, you know, parenting being just one aspect of personing. And it was interesting in the last episode, towards the end, you kind of, Rebecca, you said it felt yucky to say that you needed to invest in yourself as a parent.
Yeah. I did say that, yeah.
And I love that. And I think that that's a story.
Yeah, totally.
And I think we've been told that that is yucky, especially because another story about motherhood is that it's martyrdom. So you would be writing a new story, telling a new story for yourself and your family if you were to say, my personing is actually for you, for my parenting.
I think I just want that tattooed on my eyelids.
I am so embarrassed by how deeply that script is in me, because in my head, I know that. And then in my body, I'm like, oh, you're so selfish. You know, this isn't good for him, for you to look in the other direction and look at your, you know, like you should be gazing at him all the time. I mean, like so silly, but it's really in me. I imagine as we're talking about modeling and all of the things that were shown, if not said, I mean, like that was my mom. For sure. And to be honest, I feel like there were gifts in that. And so maybe that's part of why it's hard for me to imagine something totally different, is that I always knew that my mom had time for me and I value that. That's different. Like just this morning, Otto like wanted me to draw out the sheet music for this song that he really likes. Just like, I don't know how to do that. Do you even know what this means? What are we doing? And I'm like, I was texting Caitlin, like, it's been a chaotic morning. Like, I'm trying to like frantically draw these sheet music out for him as I'm like, but I have to get ready. Like, I've got an interview. I've got it. You know, like my mom was not like that. My mom was just like, whatever you need, whenever you need it, I'm right here. And so it's just, I don't know. I'm rambling about this. It's deep in me and it's hard for me to imagine something different. And I believe that what we're saying is true. And it's hard for me to like in my body to believe it. So I think it's just like, it feels a little bit like jumping out of a plane and thinking, I believe the parachute is there. I don't know.
The core aspects of this podcast, the conversations, Rebecca, we're wanting to have over and over is that when we became parents, that did not become our whole identity. Like that is such a narrow and limiting view of the world. And one of my overarching main goals in being a parent with Charlie is to build a foundation that when he is older, that we have a relationship. And if he doesn't see me as a whole person, then when he is 20 and he only sees me as the person who makes his peanut butter sandwiches, like in this moment, there is like power in nurturing him and being present for them and attachment. But we're doing those things, you know? And I think the most important thing that we can do for our future relationship with our kid is for them to see us as an entire person so that then when they're adults, they're like, oh, right. My mom, my parent was an adult too, not just a mom. I think about that. That's the thing that I think about all the time. But I also feel that guilt, like I have started going to the gym because not for, it feels so gross to say that I go to the gym. I feel that's my yucky thing. I have to move my body and the cold winter nights are really, really fucking with me. And so evening time, the way that I'm combating, I'm also not drinking for January and it is terrible because I really love my wine at night. And so the way that I'm coping is I'm going to the gym, but I feel bad because when I'm at home drinking wine, I'm with him, but I feel like shit, I'm not present. And so me going to like work out for 45 minutes, but it like weirdly, I've been carrying this like weird shame about it because it just feels so like selfish.
Yes. I'm only saying yes, not because it is, but because that is the feeling that the selfish word is like so quick to bubble up. But Abby, you were going to say something about all of these stories that we...
Yeah, I have so many thoughts. So let me see if I can grab back onto them all. But yeah, that's a huge script that we have. And I think the important thing to remember about that, because you're talking about, okay, I know that this is a script, but I don't know that I know that this is a script. I can't act like, you know, I know that this is a script, is that even acknowledging it as a script, again, like I said, we make our own meaning. We're telling our own stories. That is not only true for us, that is true for every human throughout history. So there's a lot of things in our society that because the choices, the stories, the meaning was made so long ago, it feels like it's innate. The best example, like most accessible example I can give to help people understand that meaning is socially constructed is the like, why in the world is blue a boy color and pink a girl color? Like,
yes, we talk about that in our house a lot right now. Yes.
Yeah. Those colors mean genders. What?
And that has shifted. It used to be the opposite.
Exactly. So it's all just meaning. It's all just stories. And so I think the first step for us when we have those like huge scripts that are more like society level scripts, the first step to unpacking those, because it is really hard, is acknowledging that it is a script and remembering somebody just made this choice a long time ago. So I can make a new choice right now in telling a new story. And I do want to kind of circle back to some of this language I just used. I'll share a paradigm or a framework in my life right now that's been really huge for, I'd say probably the last year, very front of mind for me, is what I'm calling acting like I know what I know. And I actually talked about this on another podcast called Labors of Love. And they asked the question, what's your labor of love? And I said, acting like I know what I know. And I want to break that down because each part of that's very important. The first, the knowing. I am someone who is tuned in a lot more to other people than I am to myself. So this first step is about knowing how I feel,
knowing what I want, knowing what's real to me. That in and of itself is huge. So working on that. And then I have to know what I know. And so I have to say, Abby, you know that you know this. So that's just that reaffirmation, because sometimes I'll go out in the world and I'll forget that I know something, but I know it. So to kind of re-know it, retell myself. And then I have to act like I know it. And so that's that really, you know, tangible part of how am I in the world. I have some really like big, meaningful examples of this. I have some really stupid examples of this. I realize that when I go out to eat, I don't really like fries. I love potatoes of all kinds, don't get me wrong, but I've gone out to eat and I'm like, ugh, this is not what I wanted right now. And then I go out and I'm like, oh, maybe I want fries. I order fries again. And then I'm like, no, you knew that you didn't want the fries with the burger. So acting like I know what I know would be the next time of ordering something different. That's a really silly example, but basic one to help you understand what I'm talking about here. And so that has allowed me to have a lot more compassion for myself. Because like what I'm hearing in this whole conversation you've been having about this like really high pressure anxiety to want to create a really beautiful world for your child, the flip side of that coin is the fear of regret, I think, if you don't do that or if you get it wrong, blame. Now, because I have this framework of I'm just in the process of learning how to act like I know what I know. Now, when I don't act like I know what I know, I say, okay, I'll do better next time. And I like lock it away as information rather than its own little shame spiral of why didn't I know what I knew right now in this moment. The other thing, I know that was a lot, but the other thing I do want to say too is that as you're developing your own toolbox, you're also helping your kid develop theirs. I think that's a lot of what I'm hearing through facilitating the Cosmo Parenting Podcast. I've spoken to so many parents, and there is this like strange dual experience that you know, you've put your finger on it exactly. You're parenting and you're reparenting.
Interrupting this episode to say thank you to everyone supporting the podcast on Patreon.
Our goal for 2025 is to reach $900 on Patreon each month. This would cover our overhead so that we're not paying out of pocket each month to produce these episodes.
And just so you know where your money is going, the episodes are perfected by Amelia of Softer Sounds. She runs her studio with a rare humanity, and we feel so good partnering with her.
If you believe in these episodes, if you enjoy these conversations and want them to keep showing up in your feed, would you consider joining our Patreon?
You can join for $5 a month, which comes out to $1.25 per episode. Such a deal.
If you can't support financially, there are lots of ways that you can rally around this podcast, sharing a favorite episode with a friend or on social media, leaving a 5-star review. All of that really helps us keep this thing afloat.
Thanks. We love you so much. Back to the show.
Here's another story in my life that's a good one. I just assume that I'm capable of things. And I kind of jokingly refer to that as like, that's a blessing and a curse. But I think that's the biggest gift you can give to your children is to tell them the story that they are capable of things. Caitlin, you talked about last episode how you grew up with a lot of rules. And I was wondering if what words you would use to describe how that felt, maybe like rigid or inflexible.
Yeah, well, scary. It was really scary. I think it was the weight with which the rule was held. And so like getting it wrong was like really, really high stakes.
I don't feel like I developed resilience in my life. And so hearing Caitlin's story immediately brought to mind this kind of idea of rigidity. And that's kind of my visualization for resilience is that I felt like, I don't know, a stick in the ground and the wind comes and I just snap. Because I think of that really strict adherence to like right and wrong. There's inflexibility. There's a rigidity there. So to me, resilience is about coming, I don't know, grass, more flexible. I don't, you know, I'm like picturing like the plains and grass blowing on the plains and that I can like be moved because the wind is going to come and it's going to blow you over, but you get back up. It's not bend rather than a break. And so that resilience piece for me is something that, again, you know, again, add to the list of tools to model for your kids is that they have a resilience about them and that you have a resilience about them
one thing I've experienced for myself as I reflect on how I was parented. And that's something I feel like I do in community. Other of my friends are doing that as well. And one of the biggest gifts my mom gave to me was from very early on being like, you can go to therapy. You can always go to therapy to talk about us. That, yeah, that was huge. Another of my friends, I witnessed an experience of them saying something in the presence of their mom to the effect of, I need to go to therapy for that, something in my childhood. And this person's mom was so unable to hear that. No, you don't mean that. You don't need to do that. Because very committed to saying, I'm a good mother, and whatever you're saying is a threat to that story. And so I cannot take that in, and I need you to tell me that I was a good mother. And so out of that, what I'm distilling is that the biggest gift you can give to your kids is to hold space for their story. Like you said, Caitlin, I want my kid to know that I'm a whole person, and I want them to know that I see them also as a whole person as they grow.
That's something that I think have been grappling with, like as soon as Otto had language, was just like realizing that he had his own different story. I don't know when I'll be done grieving that, but it feels important to me that he does, especially, I don't know, for me, a lot of that has been around being a disabled mom and feeling like really high stakes that there's a certain kind of story about what it means to have a disabled mom, and sort of letting go of that idea that I'm in charge of what this experience means to him or how he would describe it. I think it's very possible that it won't even be a significant story to him one way or the other. You know, like I don't know what that'll be to him, but letting go of that has felt threatening and important and scary. And I think also knowing, like resting into the fact that our kids' stories can change. I think about that mom who's so threatened, and then your mom who offered you that so early. It seems brave to me and like a gift to me to let your kid have a story about you that changes and isn't always comfy or isn't always flattering, and knowing that that story is long and will continue to build. And I like that she saw that from the beginning. Like, I probably won't do everything that's perfectly supports you in every way that you needed, and acknowledging that from the front end. I don't know, Caitlin, how do you think about Charlie having his own story? Does that feel scary to you, exciting to you?
Something that I have been really living in is this meaning making, because I have lived some stories and I have told those stories in a particular way. And I feel like the older I'm getting since becoming a parent, those stories are really shifting. The way that I'm telling them is shifting, and the meaning I'm making from them. And it's been painful and liberating to know that there was an instance that happened, and that how I'm telling it or how I'm able to see it, like I can see it from so many points of view, and knowing that other people are seeing it from so many points of view, and those things both being true and not invalidating the other, and seeing how my story, the way that I'm telling the story of my childhood, it has been evolving. For a period of time, it was really rigid. It was really set. And I feel like I'm in this season of being able to see it, how malleable actually that story could be, or how many sides there are to it, and how many ways to see it. And so that excites me. And what I want to impart to Charlie is for him to understand that, not like I'm hoping that I could change the story that he has about his childhood to be a perfect one as he gets older, but knowing that the story, that the meaning that he's making of his childhood or of me is not static. That is not going to remain the same. And we may go through seasons where the story that he has, the meaning that he's making of it, isn't comfy to me. And that is, I think some of that is just the healthy, good process of him going beyond me, and maybe the meaning he needs to make. Maybe some of those hard stories that kids tell about parents or how they feel, they have to make that meaning to be able to separate from us.
I was just going to say, I feel like part of the reason that I'm here for this conversation is that I would love to provide some ease to people like you who are parenting from the perspective and of an adult child who is doing a lot of reflecting on how I grew up.
Tell us about that.
Yeah, Caitlin talked about baggage last time. You know, there's been times in my life where I'm really angry at all the baggage I have. I'm kind of mad at my parents for the, you know, specific baggage they gave me, you know, in a like, ugh, why do I have to deal with this kind of way? And I also want to say I'm okay.
You're more than okay.
I hope I'm more than okay.
You're fantastic from where we sit. And so I'm curious. I mean, you said you this started when you found CMM. I'm wondering like what your relationship has been like with your parents as you've uncovered some of this, what they provided or didn't provide that was significant in that experience. Mm-hmm. Like, what has that process been like so far?
Great question. The experience that's been most kind of thought and feeling provoking for me is that I go off to school and I learned all about communication. And then I would come home and I would kind of share that with my family. And it's a really strange experience as a child to feel like you're teaching your parent something. But also, my parents really leaned into that, I feel like. Like they would come to me and ask me questions about how to, you know, parent or relate to my younger brother. And there's a part of me that's like, that was crossing a line. I'm not the parent. But also they saw that I had this knowledge that they didn't have and sought that out. And so that's something that I would say is like defined our relationships as I go from, you know, a child who needs my parents in the way a child needs their parents to an adult who's trying to have more of a friendship with my parents or to know my parents as full people and have them know me as a full person too. And so I'm really grateful for the way that my parents have been open to that, what I could teach them, because the flip side of that, which again, we've also experienced because it's growing pains, it's a struggle, is kind of a hesitancy to change. Or I would be worried that any kind of new ideas or interpretations of dynamics in our family would be met with like a defensiveness, because that's real too. That I'm trying to say, oh, I'm so excited because I have all this new great language to understand the stories of our lives. But it doesn't make you look too good as a parent. But I think any kind of openness to hearing that has been a gift that I maybe haven't like named or explicitly talked about, done the, you know, meta communicating with my parents of like what that means to me. Because it's like a weird pressure to be like, whoa, it's so weird to see the things that like my parents will like reference something I said a long time ago and how it's shaping them in their relationships. And I'm like, oh, that really stuck with you. That's so crazy. So it's pressure, but it's also like really special new dynamic to the relationship to be able to feel like more like two full human adult people interacting.
Yeah. From the outside looking in, it seems like with your parents, it was maybe never a lack of willingness, but a total lack of skill, like that you have like the tools, the skills, as opposed to just like a lack of interest in that kind of way of being connected, that they just needed the tools. Have there been lines that felt like it crossed something that felt harder, or have they just been very receptive and kind of humble in receiving those skills the whole time?
It is exactly like you said, Rebecca, that it's more about a lack. And that's why the toolbox, I think, makes a lot of sense to me, because it's just about having the right tools. And so that's like, that's the foundation of everything I want to be doing in the world right now with my podcast and with my work with the CMM Institute, because it's not just my parents. It is almost everybody. You know, we are woefully unequipped to navigate the communication, the communicating we need to do, the relationships we have in the way that we really want to, you know? And again, it's not because we don't know. People know, people like me know. There are plenty of, like I said, researchers and theorists. And so it's just about getting that knowledge out there and equipping people. And so I want to equip parents, and I want those parents to be able to go on and equip their children to do that. I've been reflecting a lot on a kind of, I guess I'll call it a platitude maybe, that I hear people say a lot when they're reflecting, and not to call you out, Caitlin, but you did say it in the last episode. And that was, well, my parents were trying their best.
My parents did the best with what they had. I think everybody said it. And I was just trying to think about how that felt to me. Because it doesn't feel like a warm hug. It feels like something I'm saying because I'm nervous my parents are listening and I don't want to hurt their feelings. And someone I love is Glennon Doyle, and she, you know, talks a lot about parenting, and some language she says is, what's the truthiest truth? And so to me, that's not the truthiest truth. And something that's maybe the truthiest truth would be, my parents raised me in a context where they didn't have all this information, or my parents raised me in response to how they were raised. Again, that doesn't feel warm. It just feels kind of empty, where it's like, you know, you two as parents, I feel pretty confident saying, you know, if I was like, are you at your best all the time in your parenting? I feel like you two would embrace, you know, hell no to that. And so to say, you know, well, my parents were always doing their best. Like, is that what you hope your kids say about you when you grow up? What if it's something like Caitlin also said last episode, I turned out beautifully.
You did. You are. Oh.
So like, what if that's the truthiest truth? You know, what if that's what you can guide your child towards rather than you needing their story to be about your success as a parent?
Yeah. That is an interesting reframe of like how much of this is about my obsession about whether or not I was good enough as a parent and how much of it is actually just focusing my attention on you as a person separate from me. I don't know. That's an interesting reframe.
Or just accepting that you fucked up, that it was like, I'm thinking about this in my relationship with Andrew. We've been together like 14 years, and 14 years is a really long time, and we have done so much changing, me in the most like visible, tangible ways. But, and so there are like moments in our past where we have definitely caused harm to each other, and we're like we're in this phase right now where we're like excavating those things and then like kind of rewriting the story, or just like acknowledging what happened so that we can rewrite something. And I wonder how it would, if in therapy he was like, well, I was doing the best that I could, or like, it doesn't even feel good for me to be like, he was doing the best, because it wasn't the best. Like, and it's not helpful for me. Like, neither of us, the only way that this was working is that neither of us are being defensive or claiming. We can contextualize it, there's context. But neither one of us are being like, well, it was the best that I could do. We're both being like, that was stupid. Like, that hurt. Like, that was dumb. I would never do that again. And I wonder if that is looking forward in our parenting with Charlie or Otto come back to us and like can name something to be like, yeah, that was fucked. Totally, totally not cool. Instead of being like, well, here are all of the reasons why, to just be like, yeah, I'm sorry. Like, we'll never do that again.
Okay. And I'm curious how this feels to you both. I feel like in that apology zone of like, yeah, I'm sorry, I fucked up. That was harmful and I'm sorry. I appreciate or would appreciate an acknowledgement and then like moving forward.
An act of change.
Yeah. Like, I think what I have experienced a fair amount, which does not feel very helpful or healing or good in my body, is just like apologizing relentlessly and just sort of like, oh, I can't believe I did that. I feel so terrible. I like kind of focusing in that way. And that, I don't know. I understand that impulse. I feel like that's something that I would be very prone to do, is just like, oh, I can't believe I did that. Oh, that was terrible. Oh, I messed him up. Oh, I'm so, you know, like, and just getting stuck in that. And that's not really a gift to the other person either. So there's kind of this balance between like acknowledgement and then like forging forward.
Yeah, well, here's another tool for the toolbox is repair.
Yeah, yeah.
Another thing we are woefully unequipped to do, and that's why this feels like part of the same conversation around resilience to me, because this is, again, just how I'm making meaning of how I grew up and the stories I was told, is that that's why it felt so rigid and I did not feel resilient, is because any moment of tension or conflict felt like the end of the story. I would maybe hear my parents argue
And then one of them would come into my room and say, your dad and I are fine. We, you know, we fixed it. So I was told that repair happened, but I never actually saw it happen. And it didn't feel like it had happened. And so I think about those things together very much, that when you model repair, when you yourself learn how to repair and help your kid understand how to repair, you are giving them the tool that allows them to be resilient, because they know that in their relationships, there's space for them to mess up and repair. It's not a, you know, free card to be shitty and then say you're sorry and not really mean it. Repair is a natural part of relationships. And so that applies to the toolbox we're talking about. And it applies to the larger paradigm you're talking about, that can you as a parent allow yourself to be someone that repairs rather than being someone that puts the pressure on themselves to tell the story right the first time or make the best meaning for their child the first time. And I feel like I'm getting on my soapbox a little bit. So I do want to come down and be like, I don't know what it's like to raise a child in the world. And there's so many question marks, and I'm so curious about what that experience is. So all of what I'm saying, again, is just coming from this, again, the personing part, you know, the communicating, the relationship building part. How do we want to be in the world? What do we want to create in the world? And asking those questions and, you know, trying to think about that in the context of parenting. What does that look like? Is just, that's where I'm coming from today.
I like your soapboxes, by the way. But yeah, I think, what is it like to raise a kid? The word that was just like blasted on my brain was messy. It just feels so messy to me. But one of the things that I'm hearing you say that I have been kind of processing since we've been talking about this, since Caitlin and I have been talking about this, is, and I think that this is maybe what you're getting at with thinking through language versus, or through communication versus at communication. That was a Freudian slip, because language is so important to me. What I'm noticing about myself as a parent, as I think about storytelling and paradigm building, is my very tight grasp on language. And if I figure out how to say the right thing, then you will absorb it in this way. And like, I just need to give you the right words, and I need to say this in the right way to teach you the right thing. What I hear you saying is a little bit of like stepping back from all of the words, or such a huge emphasis on just all of the words, and thinking about the interaction and the connection. And that is a big shift for me. And also that work of like, who am I as a human in this relationship, and what needs tending to in me so that I can, I don't know, that's just a different way of thinking about it. And I'm so prone to think about like, but what are the right words? What do I say in this moment? What is the secret code that I need to figure out? So that is a gift that you're giving me in this conversation, is just, it is messy, but thinking like, I just taking a step back from finding all of the right words for every moment, and thinking about the larger interaction and shape of that connection that's unfolding. As I'm thinking about this, because as I'm describing that, I'm like, have a very specific scene in my head, which is one that is unfolding in our home a lot right now, which I alluded to earlier, which is the mean words. So my son has really big feelings, which is familiar because that is me, right? So we're like two big feelers, and he's also very verbal. Again, hello, it's me. So we're like two big feelers who are very, very verbal. And he doesn't always know the words that he says. He says, he uses a lot of words that he doesn't even really know exactly what they mean, but he's trying them on and he's experimenting. And he, his thing right now is that I have this big feeling and I am figuring out the meanest possible thing that I could say, like the sharpest, biggest words in each moment. And so he is saying a lot of really mean words, big mean words, a lot of it directed to me, his dad too, but mostly me. And so in those moments, Abby, when I am like so prone to fixate on what the words themselves are and controlling the words and going in and revising the word to make sure you say a different, like for, he'll say, I hate you, which I said to my mom one time in my whole life, and she washed my mouth out with dish soap. You're right. And so it's like,
you just detonated a bomb by that word. But then if I take a step back and I think, I'm not going to obsess about what the exact word is, but think about the connection and the relationship and like zoomed out moment. What do you think of a moment like that where I have a kid who is like saying, I hate you for like nothing all the time? He's attaching that to the big feeling. And in that moment, I'm like, you cannot say those words. And I'm literally saying like, you can say you don't like me. And I'm like, why is that different? Like what? Anyways, Abby, what do you think about these two little verbal big feelers who are getting locked into their words together? And what do you see in that kind of exchange?
The first thing I want to know is a little bit more about the context of that conversation. In CMM, we talk a lot about the turns of a conversation to help us understand the patterns or the way that we're all responding to each other. You said this, so I said this. So let's say the first turn, and you know, first is arbitrary because it's all turn after turn after turn. It's all in larger context. But let's say the first turn is that you did something small. Like you said, if you want to name that, that's fine. He says, I hate you. What are the next two or three turns after that? How do you respond? And then where's he at after that?
Yes. The first turn would be something like, it's time to go potty. I hate you. Okay. There we are. And we have tried lots of different things in the next turn. So at the beginning, it was very much like, we do not say those words to each other. You can be mad, but you can't say, you don't hate your mom and dad, and we don't talk that way to each other, or something like that. Seemed like it made it worse. So then we tried being silly, and we would do like some kind of silly thing, like whoop, whoop, you what? Whoop, whoop, whoop. I don't know, like talking like a monkey or something. Maybe works sometimes, maybe doesn't. We've tried ignoring it and just like pretending like he didn't say it and just kind of going forward. And it's like he's just kind of locked into it. And I don't know if it's because so often we do end up making a big deal out of it, and then he sees our response, and then that I don't quite know exactly what's happening. But
does he stay in that place of I hate you, or like what does he do depending on your response? Is it like a doubling down? Like, is it something he feels, or is it words he's saying? What's your impression?
I think that he is having a big emotion, whether that's just like, I'm really frustrated, I don't want to do the thing that you told me to do, and so I'm going to have a big reaction. I think sometimes it's like he feels like he's in trouble, and he does not like that feeling. I mean, I think it could be a number of things, but whatever it is, it's usually really big and kind of consuming for him.
Yeah. From a communication perspective, what I would say to that is, again, just the biggest tool in my toolbox is curiosity. And I will be honest and say maybe it's not in that moment, because I don't know if you use the language or heard the language of people talk about feeling like activated or flooded, emotionally flooded. Those moments of feeling really activated, generally not the time to do the meta communicating. You know, you're not at your best in those moments. And so maybe it does work in that moment. You know, feel free to try, because that can be kind of disarming and maybe change the tone of the conversation. The thing we say about patterns is that, you know, it takes two turns to make a pattern. So if you stop showing up the way you show up, that pattern's not going to continue. So it is a great question for you to be asking, what can I do differently so this pattern happens differently? But maybe it's not exactly in that moment. But I think because a fellow lover of language, you know, I am. And so it is kind of like, but the language, it should be enough. But the action is really, like, I don't remember a lot that my parents said to me when I was little. What I do remember is what I saw and how I felt. So to what you're talking about, the situation you're talking about, I think, circling back to those questions I brought at the top, why do you say you hate me in that moment? What does it mean to you? What are you feeling in that? Can you tell me more about what you're feeling in the moment? Oh, tell me more. I love it. It's not really a question. I guess it's a statement, but I love that, because this is something I say when I'm in therapy usually, is like, it's not how I feel, it's how I feel about how I feel. Or, you know, it's kind of like a once removed, where it's like, it's not about the lived story, it's about the told story. It's not about what's happening, it's about the meaning I'm making. And so your kid is saying, I hate you. Okay, but the meaning you're attaching is that feels really horrible. And so you actually want to do something about the meaning, I think. Again, not to take away the very real experience of that, but just to give yourself a moment, a little bit of distance to step back and see it again through a communication lens, because you're asking yourself the question, what am I creating here? What are we creating in these interactions? Yeah.
That feels like a shift in thinking about those moments. Thank you for indulging me in that very personal, weird cycle that we're in. But I think that that's a good example of the thinking about communication versus through it.
Well, the other thing I'd add too is like, again, I said, what am I creating? That's not really the question. What are we creating? It's all relational. And so I think this is also a moment to invite your child into understanding that. Like I said, I think that's what you're giving your kid. You're saying, hey, you're an active participant. And so as you're asking them what something means to them, I think it's great to share what it means to you and help them understand how they're contributing to the social world too. Because a lot of kids, you know, feel like they're in environments and are in environments where they're not in control. And so I think a moment like that where you can help them understand how you're creating something together and help them to want to be more thoughtful about that maybe.
I feel like the way that I've handled this type of situation, which it's different where like I'm not having these kind of words, but it's more like physical aggression is, okay, so I'm going to say what it is, but then Abby, I want you to tell me what you think about what I'm doing. Because I started this when he was little to try and help give him language for what he was feeling, but I also think it could be me giving him a story. So I want to kind of pull that apart. But I would say like, you're feeling really mad right now, or you're feeling angry, or you're feeling X. And now I try and pose it more as a question. But when he was little, pre-verbal, when he was feeling like acting in a certain way, I would be like, you're feeling this, aren't you? Like trying to call to like what was underneath it. So if you're like, let's go potty, Otto's like, I hate you. You could be like, you're feeling really mad. You don't want to sit on the potty. And I don't know if it turns into a question. So I don't want to like be assigning emotions to Charlie. And also, I feel like the only thing that he could see in that moment is that you are the one making him feel a certain way because he has to go potty. And if you could redirect it from, it's the sitting on the potty, not the you that he hates. And I wonder if there's a way to reframe that. But is that too controlling?
The thing I want to first say, kind of reiterate, is that what I'm hearing from you is that you're really worried about giving your child a story, and you are going to give your child a story. You are telling a story. You're always telling a story. So it's, the question is not really, how do I not tell them a story? But how do I tell them a story that feels warm, feels good, feels what it was, you talk about like stability. Is that the right word, Rebecca? I feel like be a steady parent.
Oh yeah. Like the captain of the ship kind of.
Right. What feels like a steady story to give them. And on top of that, help them understand the many stories can coexist at once. Help them understand that this is my story. So maybe instead of, you're feeling really angry right now, it feels to me like you're really angry right now. Is that a right understanding? Is that how you're feeling?
And he will scream, no, I'm not.
Probably. Yes. Yes. That brings up a good point, is that to me, again, by focusing on communication, what I'm saying is that it's so much more about how you're being than what exactly you're doing. And so maybe he screams no at you and you're like, well, that was a failure. You still modeled for him curiosity, expressing what something means to you and asking him what it means to him. You've still done that. Whether it feels like he's internalizing that or not is what I'm thinking right now. So again, you are going to tell a story. So it's not, you know, I would just love to lift off of your shoulders the, you know, kind of debilitating fear of like, what if I tell the wrong story? Right and wrong, that language really doesn't exist in CM. There's not a right and wrong. There's just a lot of stories and a lot of truths that we're all living out. To me, I think the kind of issue in our world, or where CMM can speak into our ways of being right now that are maybe not working for us as well, is that we're so obsessed with trying to oversimplify things. We do want to make things make sense. Again, we're meaning-making creatures. I have a lot of empathy for that. But what CMM and a communication perspective asks us to do is, rather than making the goal, ooh, that's complex, I need to simplify it, it's, ooh, that's complex, how do I lean into that? Again, you have to feel like you're equipped for that. A lot of times, like, discomfort, disorientation, tension is like, ooh, I'm out, like turn away. It's a sign to turn back rather than to lean in when you're not feeling like you're equipped to navigate that tension or that challenge or that discomfort.
That's the curiosity.
Yeah, right.
I think this is how we wrapped up last episode. I'm not sure, but it was kind of, for me, what I took away was less about making sure I build the perfect paradigm for Charlie, but not pretending like that's not what we're doing. Like that he understands that this is the story that I am telling for us. These are the values that I am building, but there's so many values and there's so many stories. And I think that is what I'm wanting to do differently than the way that I was raised, where that rigidity was like, this is the only story. And if you don't adhere to this story, you don't belong. You are not safe. Hypothetically, but also very literally, you will burn forever and die. And so to be like, this is how I feel, and this is the way that I'm building this thing, and there's so many other ways to build something, which I hope would give both of us space for, as his story shifts, separate from mine, that I have been, as I'm telling him that there's so many stories, I'm also hearing it so that I remember that there's so many things can be true at one time, so that I'm hopefully not so upset that his story is different than mine.
I've been trying to build that into like little tiny moments with Otto. So like if we're looking at a picture in a book or something and he says like, what is that bird doing or something? And I'll say, I see. I think it's trying to look down at that house. What do you think it's doing? I think it's about like, to me, that little tiny moment is like, I see something. I'm going to share with you what I see, but I want to know what you see. And you might see something different. I also feel like that feels like an important piece of it. But to go back to Abby's framework, it's about like, I don't know. To me, it seems like what we're modeling there is not the importance of like the exact words that we're exchanging, but that it's like this connection that allows us to look out into the world and see things differently from each other, and like creating moments of that kind of posture. Is that a tool? I don't know. I don't know what that is.
Yeah, I think so. Because again, to me, the language and the words, they are important. They do matter. It's really, really beautiful to have language to describe what we experience. Because if we don't have the language to talk about what we experience, then we don't talk about what we experience. So that's so important. But you also have to think, again, communication's not just what's being said. And so I think maybe I would imagine one of the roles as a parent to be is about the space you create within which your communicating happens. And so when a parent says to their child, you know, or reflects to their child, I can't hear you say that you need to go to therapy because of anything I've done, that sets a huge tone for what stories and what communicating can happen in the space of that relationship. So I think as a parent, maybe that's the question of like, yes, what I'm communicating matters in terms of words, in terms of language I'm offering my child. And also, what's the space I'm creating for myself and them and other members of the family to communicate into? I want to reference Glennon Doyle again, because one of the things that, you know, I've heard her wrestle with on, she has a podcast and a book, is talking about something similar to the question you all asked last week, which was, what do you want to teach your kids about the world? I want to tell my kid the story that the world is beautiful and people are kind and you can be brave and you can take risks. Like, you want that to be the world. So you want to tell that story about the world. But that also feels like a disservice, because some people are not kind. And sometimes you will fail and scary things will happen and bad things will happen. And so is it my duty to tell that story about the world? So it's like, what's that balance between what you hope the world is and what the world actually is? One of the examples that Glennon shares, though, that I think is a really important distinction, is that sometimes in our worry about preparing children for the world, we end up being the voice of the very thing we were trying to protect them from. Like, I think an example she talks about, you know, is like, again, very simple example, but I think it's, you know, illustrative of what I'm trying to say of like, are you sure you want to wear that? Because maybe you're worried as a parent, oh, that doesn't look very good, or people won't like that my kid is wearing his pajamas and it's picture day, or, you know, whatever. You're worried that the world is going to say that to your kid, and then you're the one saying that to your kid. I'm not trying to create a new fear for parents by adding that in there. But to me, this is all bringing me back to that. If you're asking the question, what do you want to teach your kid about the world? I would reorient toward teaching your kid about their relationship to the world and emphasizing you are a meaning-making being, you are a storyteller, you are an active participant in the world,
And for everything that falls outside of the realm of what you can control, which is basically yourself, you can control yourself. Everything else, we are equipping you with tools like curiosity, with tools like repair, with tools like doing this meaning-making work, this improvisational work, so that you feel like you can go out into unexpected situations and improvise into them well.
And it feels like I also hear you saying part of it is a belief that you're capable. You can meet the challenge that you will face in the world. Bring it back to Glennon. You can do hard things, right? You can do hard things. Wow. Abby, I just looked at the clock and I'm shocked by it. I am assuming that we all have places to go. Is there anything last minute that you want to add or underscore or throw in there?
Just to go off of what you just said, I think step one absolutely is that belief, cultivating that belief that you have choices and you get to tell stories. Because like I said, that's not something I grew up with. So before I could really lean into what CMM had to say, I had to believe that for myself. That's kind of like the buy-in almost. If you start seeing yourself as someone who gets to make their own meaning in the world, then you start to feel, for me, it's very empowering to think about the world that way. I have a lot of choice, I have a lot of ability to create the kind of social world I want. And so I think I would leave people with starting to see themselves as that, that there's a lot of stories that we've been passed on. And it's a lot of hard work to go through all of them. But you do have the ability to tell a new story. And it doesn't look like, you know, huge insurmountable things to do that. It's, you know, in our communication, in our everyday little moments, that's how we tell a new story with each other, with our kids and with other people. So that's the best I can give to people, I think.
Like acting like I know what I know. Yeah.
Yeah.
I've got a whole page of notes I'm going to be mulling over and processing. And thank you for the gift of your words today and all that you shared and modeled and all the little nuggets of things for us to keep chewing on. Thank you. We appreciate you and adore you.
Thank you for letting me be a part of this. I've loved it.
Go listen to Cosmo Parenting. That's what I'm going to be listening to.
Yeah. Are there any other places where you want people to find you? Where should we send them?
Yeah, so Cosmo Parenting is on Substack, but you can also listen to it wherever you listen to podcasts like Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stories Live, Stories Told. Also, wherever you listen to podcasts, and through there, you'll be able to find everything else I do with the CMM Institute. We've got a lot of great resources for people who are curious about what I've talked about today and wanting to learn more about how they can begin to embody that in their life.
Thank you. We love you.
Thank you both. Love you.
Bye.
This podcast is edited and perfected by Amelia of Softer Sounds.
For all the show notes and a transcript of today's episode, check out our Patreon, Scratch That Podcast. This is our hub. It's where you can join the conversation and be part of our community.
If today's episode resonated with you or made you think of someone, share it.
And if you want to support the pod and also make us glow inside, go give a 5-star review on Apple. That would be so lovely.
Thank you for being here, for listening, for being a part of this community.
We love you so much.